Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, this is something that you and I have talked about, honestly, for 2 years or so now. Somewhat timely with the recent news of ESPN's pretty drastic cutbacks, but I think we want to have a little bit of conversation, a broad conversation about the future of media. Now, obviously, this is all in a way going to be tied to Florida State, particularly when we talk about TV deals, how much particular media properties are paying per bowl. It will be college football centered, but it will be a pretty broad conversation about media and sports media and the future of it. But as I mentioned, this is something that we've discussed for a while about doing, and want to just thank our friends at Louisiana Hot Sauce who make podcasts like this possible. It's a great partner to have. We've certainly talked at length about how much we love their main just kind of bread and butter product, their standard hot sauce product. I've talked about it at length as far as the different parts of my day when I use it and what I love to put it on. But I know you recently ran across another item that's in their product line.
Yeah, man. I was using collard greens and I came across their peppers and vinegar sauce, which is really good. I like it. It's at pretty much all your barbecue restaurants. You can also buy it in the grocery store. It's great, man. And I got to say, I picked some up and went through it. And I was like, I need some more of this. So I put some more vinegar in. And the quality of peppers you're using is really solid. And it was just as good the second time through. And for all you folks who like to eat some collards or you put out some green beans or whatever, it is a nice little change up to the other red sauce to be able to go with the clear vinegar with the peppers in there. Definitely a nice product from one of our loyal sponsors, Louisiana Hot Sauce. Yeah, man, I'm excited to get into this with you. And, today, Wednesday, the 26th today, ESPN announced over 100 layoffs. So that's, really disappointing, obviously. And a lot of good people got laid off here. I mean, I'm going through this list here. And you mentioned that this is something we've been wanting to do for a while. It is. And I'm glad we saved it because I'm actually going on vacation. So we won't be able to do a show together for, until probably the 7th or the 8th, maybe the 9th of May. Now, you're probably going to have an individual episode. But as far as the tag team of us, it's going to wait a bit. So I think this is pretty well future-proofed, right? People are trying to catch up on episodes. This is something that should last a good bit. And I feel like it's an episode that we'll be referring back to in the future. So, we have Doug Glanville, Major League Baseball analyst, getting let go. Josh Parcell of ESPNU. A number of soccer guys who I haven't really heard of, but Jade McCarthy on SportsCenter anchor. Greg Ostendorf was a SEC/Alabama reporter. Dottie Pepper, golf commentator, legal analyst Roger Kosick. I think a lot of people probably saw him during the Jameis type stuff. That's an interesting one. Jamie Sire as SportsCenter anchor. Chantel Jennings, who did the Pac-12 and did a really good job out there. I feel like Lynn Elmore, college basketball, a ton of college basketball people.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the ESPNW, which is like the ESPN women's section. Pac-12 reporter Ted Miller, Trent Dilfer, Brian Bennett, who was the Big Ten guy, Jason Stark. I mean, longtime MLB writer. I mean, I don't even think they have the full 100 on here. Danny Cannell, another 5 or 10 college basketball folks. Derek Tyson, Jeremy Crabtree, both really good recruiting guys who I work next to on a weekly basis at the camps I go to. Brett McMurphy.
Yeah.
Name I think most people would know. Jim Bowden. Very famous baseball guy. And there's probably some names on here that I didn't list that you recognize from, and I know you're a bit of a soccer fan and I'm not. This is crazy, man. It's bad luck and unfortunate leadership colliding. And generally you don't clear out leadership. You clear out the people underneath them sometimes. And that looks like what's going on here. I guess we can start with the reason why this happened, at least as I understand it. And look, I work for a pretty large media company and, you know, I talk to people in the industry about this because I want to know. You know, I still keep my law license. Am I going to have to go use it soon? I like what I'm doing. ESPN is a rights-based business. Okay, and for those who don't know what that means, they have the rights to broadcast games, whereas a lot of, you know, sports media do not necessarily. ESPN has a ton of rights. I think upwards of $6 billion in rights fees that they've negotiated. They pretty much had to have them because, you know, a couple of years ago, Fox was trying to get Fox Sports 1 off the ground, and if they had gotten more rights deals, they would have been a pretty legitimate threat to ESPN, potentially. NBC was trying to launch their sports network a little more. If they had gotten more rights deals, you know, they have some golf, they have some hockey, they have some Olympic stuff, they have some soccer. They kind of stay in your lane, and what they do, they do it very well. But if they had gotten more rights, they could have been more of a threat. So ESPN really had to make sure that it kept all its sports rights, according to its business model. Now, unfortunately for ESPN, Ingram, it seems like they were having to pay to keep their rights at the very height of a sports bubble. So let's go back to the housing crisis a minute. These people who were speculating on all these houses towards the end who didn't see the bubble coming, they're left holding all this inventory that's just not worth what they paid. That's what ESPN is right now. They own all these rights. And yet, it's pretty clear that their business model is, I'm not going to say it's toast, but it's certainly
it's antiquated.
Going to have to change.
Yeah, very much so. So it's hard to say exactly the absolute alpha or where this all started, but it's very much in bidding on media properties, as you mentioned. And then it was also with a real change in philosophy, I don't know, 5-7 years ago or so, to go to this like all live, all day programming. And that's, I don't know that is going to do you a whole lot more in viewership. And I don't know that the viewership that you're going to get is all that desirable. And it's incredibly labor intensive and it's costly. And you've bought all these properties at the top of a market as far as media rights go, and then you continue to ramp up your labor cost pretty significantly with all day live programming. That's you know, you created a little bit of a valley for yourself to fall right into there with real sharp expenditures on either side of you. So it's been an interesting look at what they've done. Now, I know there's an underlying theme to this that a lot of people are talking about, and it's a subject that you and I have intentionally steered clear of or stayed clear of for the 6 or 7 years that we've done this, and that is politics. And ESPN has probably shifted to the left some, undoubtedly, but at least for me personally, I don't know that that is why they're shedding subscribers. They're shedding subscribers because of a media landscape that has changed so drastically over whatever window of time you want to judge it by. If you want to look at it through a 3-year window, a 6-year window, certainly through a 10-year window, there has been drastic shifts. And as you mentioned there, the model that they're seemingly running off of is not necessarily reflective of the changes that have happened, particularly in the past 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, you're exactly right there. And I had a bunch of people tweeting at me today that ESPN was failing because of politics. That's just not accurate. I mean, if you want to put that narrative on there, go ahead. But you know, we've always been more, you know, facts over narrative, and we'll continue to be here. Now, you mentioned the word cord cutting. Some people are cutting the cord. I think in large part what's happening here is that a lot of people are never plugging in the cord. And specifically the group I'm talking about here is younger people, that sort of 18 to 32, 34 demographic who, you know, they're very digitally savvy. They are cool. What you got to realize is that people listening to this podcast almost certainly love sports. But most of the population, and by most, I just mean a majority, don't want to pay for ESPN. Right. So you have, you know, if you look at your demographics, right, like I don't think we will ever get an advertiser on here that caters specifically to women. Just our numbers, right? That's just what feedback we get. A lot of women and some men don't want to buy ESPN because they don't like sports. They're not into it. And that's fine. The problem for ESPN comes in that previously, let's say 10 years ago, they really didn't have an option. If they wanted to watch, what's the channel my wife watches? Bravo, right? Or AMC or whatever. If you wanted to get those, you had to buy cable. And with cable came ESPN. And ESPN, for folks who don't know, is 5 times more expensive on your cable bill than any other individual channel, excluding like HBO and premium channels and whatnot. We're talking about cable channels here. Back then, you didn't have a choice. Nowadays, guess what? How many people do you think, and I asked my wife about her friends, and she kind of confirmed my suspicion, said, all right, how many of your girlfriends who are single have cable? And we really couldn't think of any. And I think that's really reflective now. Think about, you know, half the population is women, and then you have a lot of other folks who are men who are not into sports. If only 40% of your people actually want your product, and now those people who don't want it have an avenue to get what they do want without paying for your product, there's your cord being cut, or more accurately described, never being plugged in, because, you know, people mooch off their parents, use their parents' logins for a little while, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're on their own. Like, yeah, actually, I'm okay with Netflix. I'm okay with Hulu. I'm okay with, you know, Roku or Sling or any of these streaming services that I don't need a cable subscription. That's the primary thing. It's not, you're not having many. I'm not going to say you're not having any, but you're not having many. You're not having a significant number or any kind of meaningful number of people being driven away from ESPN subscriptions by, you know, ESPN being more left than it used to be. I don't think, and I don't think ESPN thinks either.
Yeah.
I do think that you're finding a lot of people who don't want cable now don't pay for cable. There are avenues around. Do you have cable?
I do not have cable. No, I don't. And don't.
And you work in sports.
Miss having cable. Don't particularly need it. I won't go too deep into this, but Bud and I have never taken a whole lot of money out of this podcast, but I could very easily have the humble company that we created pay for my cable bill. I don't need it. I don't use it. I wouldn't watch it, really. I get cable for 4 months a year, and you can probably guess as to what window of time that is, but that's the only time I need it, and that's really the only product that I consume on it. There's just so many different options out there for how product's available and what you can watch if you really want to.
And I think that speaks volumes, man. And, you know, this is a good example of how it's not these people's faults, you know, who got laid off. You had a heck of a lot of good people, you know, who got laid off. And for everyone that I ran down that I was like, I don't know who that is, or, you know, I'm not necessarily going to miss their content. There was somebody who I was like, damn it. They do a really good job. They're, you know, really good at what they do. I've worked next to this person in the press box. I've seen how they hustle. I know what kind of quality content they produce. You know, it's really kind of scary out there. You know, I think the scarier thing, though, is we don't really know what's next. I don't think these debate shows are going to go away. I mean, ever since CNN's Crossfire, debuted, these have only become more and more popular, and people are like, I hate this. Mm-hmm. You know, why? I don't want to watch First Take. I don't want to watch whatever. Well, guess what? You're in the minority because those shows pull ratings. Stephen A. Smith didn't get fired today. Stephen A. Smith still makes his $9 million or whatever he makes because his show pulls numbers. People watch that stuff, even though I think it's trash. I don't know where ESPN goes from here, though. I mean, at some point, are they going to have to back out on some of these rights deals?
Yeah, but I mean, that is, if you're a college football fan, and if you want to look at this through the prism of a Florida State fan or how the ACC or SEC or anybody else could be impacted, I mean, that's the Autobahn to that is if you ever have ESPN either default on some of these deals or back out of some of these contracts, I don't know, but that's not what you saw today was pretty drastic. I don't know that what you saw today was a complete cure for what ails them. I'll also say, I mean, this is a really wild time for media in general. I read an article yesterday that iHeartRadio, the largest owner of radio stations in the country, acknowledged in their quarterly report that they could potentially fail as within soon as a calendar year. That's hard to get your head around if you've ever worked in the radio business, or if you just think about how many different stations and how many different markets that encompasses. I know Cumulus, which is a company that I have more experience with iHeart, has had nothing but 3 or 4 years of pretty rough time. And if you look at their stock chart over a half decade period of time, it's wildly troubling and only heads in one direction pretty sharply. So radio is very much in play as well as far as what the future of that is. And even things like Netflix. Netflix has an incredible business and how much it's been adapted, but it also has to borrow a ton of money and is not for as profitable as they are. Their balance sheet is has a lot of debt on it as well. Again, I'm starting to go too micro into some of this stuff, but there's no area of media that has a whole lot of certainty tied to it. And I'll even add that if some of the things at the presidential level happen, then you'll see potentially NPR go away. And NPR, whether you love that or not, if you consume podcasts that are broader than a pure sports genre, you consume a lot of product that is either done by people at NPR or former NPR employees. So the NPR is very much kind of the generator of most of the top 100 podcasts in the world. And certainly, things like Serial or S-Town, is very much people with an NPR background. So there's all sorts of different areas in media that are laced with uncertainty. So maybe that gives people a little bit more perspective that this is not necessarily just a TV thing, alone, a standalone deal.
Yeah, and look, this is all affecting advertisers, right? Maybe one of the only segments out there that's growing like we want to as far as advertiser dollars is podcast revenue, which certainly I think hurts the radio industry quite a bit, to the extent that you now have competitors to the radio industry. We probably hurt radio in some way, producing, 7.5 hours of content a year, roughly, that we give. You look at much bigger podcasts than us, they do as well. An hour listening to us is an hour not listening to a radio show. The advertising dynamics, and you're right, this is probably way too meta here. But man, it's tough out there. And something that one of my younger colleagues brought up, he said, I don't know anybody who doesn't use their parents' password for Netflix or Comcast. I think that's something that's probably got to be solved as well. If we want to talk about people cord cutting or never plugging in, well, if you let me use your cord and just split off it, like back at the fraternity house when we're running, cable splitters all over the place, I'm probably not going to ever pay for it. That they have to figure out a technology to do that. And I know that that's an issue with all kinds of different subscription-based services, whether they be websites or what have you.
Yeah, I'm surprised they haven't made that more ISP-specific or more able to control who has access to content, because you're right. It's whether the three sisters share an account or the whole family, it's certainly a lot of different examples of either kids using their parents' logins or a couple different guys who will share access to just all sorts of different services, whether it be being able to watch live sports on your phone because you logged into Fox Sports Go or any of the other channel-specific apps that are out there. But it is you're right. They would be wise to try to find a way to just streamline that as far as who has access, and that in and of itself would probably improve their profitability because you just wouldn't have as many consumers sharing one particular subscription. So, Bud, if we're going to talk subscriptions, and this is a little disjointed, I wanted to bring something up that I've saw a couple months ago and made a note to bring it up when we did have a chance to talk about this. And I really wonder if the future of all of this isn't somewhat what you're starting to see in soccer, where you have team-specific broadcast, where your content is not... You go straight to the source for your content, and you're not going to three different parties that have put a markup on it. A lot of different club teams in Europe you can watch on a per game or a per year basis. One that caught my eye in particular was Juventus. Now we're not going to make this a soccer podcast, but Juventus is probably one of the six biggest clubs in the world, and even a people who aren't wild about soccer have probably at least heard that name in passing. For next year, for $34 a year, but if I wanted to, you can sign up with that club specifically and watch every piece of content that they produce and every game that they take part in. Now, I'm a little interested in how they can do that with like some of the properties that aren't particularly theirs as far as European tournaments, Champions League, etc. But nonetheless, that's what they've done, and I really wonder if the future of media is not going directly either to the school, professional sports team, the soccer club, whatever it may be, and if that isn't more where you're actually consuming the content.
I think you're exactly right there. I mean, the fragmentation is not going to stop. And I think that's hurting a big monolith like ESPN as well. For instance, you know, you used to watch highlight shows, right? How many times would SportsCenter play over and over again in your house growing up? Like three or four times it'd run in a row and you probably would still not turn it off. Nowadays, I can't remember the last time I sat down and I watched SportsCenter for the highlights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Occasionally, I'll sit down and watch College Ball Final, which is, you know, has college ball highlights. But a lot of times, I've already seen it. I've watched it on my phone. I've watched it on my tablet or whatever. You know, I don't care about the NBA, really, or the NHL. And people have more specialized fanhoods now, I think, than they used to. I think there are fewer... like general sports fans. Sports teams in general have done a good job cultivating people to be like super fans of that one team, with the exception of the NFL because of fantasy football and gambling. You know, so that I don't know how much general applicability a kind of broad spectrum highlight show like SportsCenter really has in this day and age. And I think to tie it to your point about the team offering that service, why wouldn't I just want to have the team give it to me as opposed to ESPN, which doesn't know as much about the team and is not going to give me quite as much of that team content?
Yeah, and that's really tied to what I mentioned 10 or 15 minutes ago about live content. It's real easy for us to sit here and pick apart some of the things that ESPN have done, and it's some of it's really foolish. Some of it, they're just a victim of a much larger trend in media in general, but the idea that they were going to go live on SportsCenter, which is, yes, it's a highlight show. It's kind of tried to morph into more pop culture, but the basis, the bones of SportsCenter is that it's a highlight show. Highlights, social media has more or less made the idea of a highlight show extinct. I mean, you can consume... you can find a 60-second recap of a game on either Twitter or Instagram or whatever it may be damn near instantaneously. Or I was kind of surprised by this. 2 days ago, I read an article that was on SI.com. It was about a soccer game. It was a game where I think four or five goals were scored, and they didn't have the rights to show you the actual – the American feed, but you could click on these links within a story and see these goals that were scored with either a Russian announcer or some Eastern European. So it's just my whole point in that is that all of these things are available damn near instantaneously, and the idea that you're going to carve out a 30-minute block at either 9 o'clock in the morning or 11 o'clock at night or any other time to sit down and consume a highlight show on a television is an idea that was much more based around the early 1990s than the back part of the 20-teens.
There's no doubt about it. And I feel like, you know, the other failure of ESPN here is, can I really find these highlight shows where I want to on my mobile devices, right? Let's say that I like to watch baseball highlights in the morning, okay? Do you have a 30-minute show for me that I can watch as I take the train into work on my phone? You know, it not like some hour-long thing with a lot of commentary. If I did want to get highlights, can you provide them to me in some sort of condensed way that I can easily access them on my mobile device? Because I got to tell you, man, mobile traffic is everything now. Mm-hmm. For all y'all that still read articles on your computer, thank you from a website publisher. But there's not many of you. I mean, mobile traffic is upwards of 80%. 80% of people read articles not on a desktop or on a laptop, but on a mobile device. And I don't think ESPN has done a good job adapting to that fast enough.
I was going
to
say, those numbers aren't all that different than how people shop either. I mean, it's the way that it's moved. You're on your tablet or your phone for almost your whole internet browsing experience.
Yeah. And especially with the connectivity now, you can be signed into Google Chrome and my bookmarks port over, right? You know, I can say, okay, pull up the tabs that I had open on my laptop, and all of a sudden I've got them on my tablet or on my phone. It's awesome in a way, but, you know, I don't know that ESPN's system has caught up to that, and we're using ESPN here because they're the giant monolith, but that's kind of the nature of the beast. You know, when somebody, in some ways, they're like the 800-pound gorilla in the room, right? But I think they're really more like 1,800-pound gorilla because they're so weighted down by their right stuff that it makes it hard for them to adapt and move on the fly. When you're that big, there is some bloat. But
real hard to turn an aircraft carrier. Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so I think our pivot here is probably...
I can tell you where I would pivot from here, and that is...
go ahead, sorry.
We need to talk about whether or not ESPN's ever going to get this ACC channel off the ground and how that in my opinion, brings it back more to Florida State and what that looks like.
Yes. So I think that is a sub-convo of the question of, look, it's pretty easy to identify the problems. It's a lot harder to identify solutions, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Do you have any solutions?
Do I particularly have any solutions for them?
Yeah.
No, I mean, well, not anything that can be... I mean, they were... So when I was working for 680, at the time it was a ESPN property, and they were... Do you remember when they were rolling out, like, all that ESPN... Chicago, ESPN LA, ESPN Boston, all that stuff.
Yes.
I wonder if that either would have been a colossal failure or a major success. It could have been a little bit better of presenting more, you know, narrow your focus, broaden your appeal. It could have been, but that's a pretty expensive undertaking as well. I think what you mentioned about concise, really specific product, like give me 18 minutes of baseball, of National League Baseball talk or something like that, or 18 minutes of American League, like stuff that you can get on the train, watch on your way to work, and that's it. I think that's their best bet as far as moving forward. And also, I mean, I don't know how they would enact that, but cable in general has to do something about how many different people are able to access an account and how many different ISP addresses and anything else. So maybe you can use up to three devices or something like that.
like three registered devices or something.
But all these cable companies are selling themselves, bud, on your wife can watch Netflix on her laptop in the bedroom. Your son can watch YouTube on his computer in the living room. The TV can have three. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's all accessibility and accessibility on the go, which is going to be a harder thing to pare down how much, how many different places you can access this stuff from.
I totally agree. Maybe there's some sort of, man, this is tough, now I know with Comcast, if you use like the Comcast mm-hmm. Watch app, right? Because I was in Chicago over the weekend for a recruiting camp, and I wanted to watch. I really like MLB Network, actually. Like, they do that's a really, really well run network, and obviously they don't have rights issues because they, they're a subsidiary of Major League Baseball, which produces the sport. But they're not listed under the available to watch outside of the home section. So maybe there are certain changes coming to that. I'm not sure. I don't know how you do it. You need somebody smarter than me, and maybe smarter than you to figure out the exact solutions. But that is something they got to work on, because if you're able to cut people off from using their parents' logins so much, then you might actually get a few more subscribers. And then I think they have to master fragmentation and be okay just taking a profit.
Right.
Right. On, and this is the cable companies, not ESPN specifically. Take a profit. Sell a package without ESPN in it. Right? To sell a package that is targeted more at different demographics. Give me TLC, Bravo, AMC, and what channel is Chopped on?
Couldn't tell you. Probably. That Food sounds Network? About right. But either more something excess like in packages, or move to the pure a la carte model. And I know a lot of people are hesitant about that, but that may be the only thing you can do. And you're right. That's swallowing a pill that is a much smaller level of profitability, but that may be all there is for it for you to take. All right, bud, this has been a pretty good deep dive into this subject in general, and I know there's some other things that we want to talk about. But before we do, let's take time to mention our friends at Madison Social for the Table Restaurant Group in general. But Madison Social has been with us since the beginning, and want to just remind people, as they may be ending their time in Tallahassee with graduation approaching, just keep Madison Social in mind, whether it's a place you want to take mom and dad one night, whether or not it's a place you go for a private party for graduation, or if it's a fantastic option, this would be Madison Social or any of their three entities all fall under the social catering umbrella. So keep them in mind as far as a potential destination for a caterer, potentially for a graduation themed event. And just always want to thank our friends at Madison Social, and that they've allowed us to keep doing this and grow the podcast and be able to sit here and really go in depth on a subject like this.
Absolutely. And might I add that not only does Madison Social sponsors us, but really For the Table Restaurant Group does, which is the parent company of Madison Social, Central, and Township. And I want to tell everybody about a cool thing on Township. It's just popped up on their Instagram. But Township is a really cool pub style restaurant that they have. Cool beer garden deal. And Ingram, did you know on Friday during lunch, if you buy a lunch, you get a free beer?
Free beer Friday. That does not suck. I did not know that. That's a great
free beer Friday.
Great promo.
Very cool.
Absolutely.
I like that.
I tell you what, you take a late lunch, maybe only go back in the office for an extra 45 minutes or so. That would be a strong Friday. Strong beginning to the weekend.
Go back to the office.
Yeah, maybe don't go back to the office at all. That'd be even better.
I mean, it goes till 3 p.m. every Friday Ingram, you could totally pull off the not going back to the office thing if you're like, I'm going to take a late lunch today.
Lake lunch, 2:15. See ya. See ya. Yeah.
Peace. So let's pivot back to college football. How does this become – how does this work with the ACC, with Florida State, with them trying to get
this
ACC network?
This is kind of the sword of Damocles, if you will, while you watch what happened this morning. I mean, there's no – in my opinion, there's very little chance that that thing – let me see how I can say this that thing looks the way that people want it to, particularly from day one. I mean – you're boxing up and all the stuff we talked about. We didn't even mention that ESPNU in Charlotte is more or less shut down, and that's moving back to Connecticut as well. They are. This is seriously going to scale back some of the content that they have out there, and I have real concerns as to what this means for the ACC's deal. I just don't think it's going to be all that profitable for ESPN, and anything that's not all that profitable, I think, is going to be approaching the chopping block. Now, I'm not saying it's that Florida State or the conference is going to get zero from this. I'm not trying to paint doom and gloom, but I think you'd be foolish if you don't have some concern for what this means for the future of the ACC network.
I'm right there with you. Now, the one thing I will say is that digital is fairly cheap, you know, and their initial plans for this were all digital. I think that's possible to get this thing off the ground in a digital capacity, but it may just be in part replays of games that are already produced, you know. All these studio shows are more expensive, like you noted. And I don't know if we're going to have like ACC First Take, you know, maybe we do, but I kind of have a hard time believing that. I will tell you this, though. I think at a certain point, this college sports bubble is going to burst. I'm not sure how much coaching contracts are going to continue to go up. I think eventually players will break through in court and they will have to be paid. And I don't think, like, for instance, do you ever see rights contracts getting higher within
television,
our lifetimes?
Television rights
for college
in our life? Yeah, probably in our lifetimes, right. But it may be 2 decades or so.
I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, that in and of itself is a big deal. But what did you mention to me earlier today that ESPN pays what's the number? 80 million? 800 million for the Rose Bowl?
I thought I saw like 80 million a year or something for the Rose Bowl, which I can't buy that. I feel like that's not correct. I know we were marveling at that. That's hard to believe, but man, the money they're spending and like the money they spend on the NBA, you know, that allows like the
just ridiculous money. Yeah, Sports Business Daily has ESPN paying $80 million a year for the Rose Bowl.
$80 million for the Rose Bowl,
and that's in the 2012. So that may have gone up since then. But yeah, $80 million a year for a football game for 4.5 hours of content.
Well, they probably get the Rose Parade and they get like live shots in there and stuff. So it's more than just 4.5 hours.
Right. You're right. Yeah. Yeah. Certainly. But
even if we call it 10,
you telling me you're paying $80 million for a parade. You're right. There is a little bit more than that, but it's limited.
All right. If we call it 10 million a year or, you know, 10 hours of programming, that's still $8 million an hour they're paying. Look, man, they make a lot of money in advertising. ESPN's not going broke this year. But damn it, like that, I know they're hemorrhaging subscribers and, you know, they're not replacing the ones who leave or die off at an acceptable rate. But that just seems dumb.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that seems dumb in this in retrospect. The Rose Bowl's previous deal was something like $29.8 million a year, and that jumped up to 80, which is 170% jump, something like that. I mean, that's when you look back at some of these deals that were agreed to, it's hard not to see how a bubble is not hasn't been formed and that it maybe hasn't already started to pop.
Yeah, I think that there is absolutely a college sports bubble, and it's going to pop, I think. Now, I don't know. It doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, the thing pops all the way and it never reforms and it never stabilizes. But, you know, that's why I like the bubble analogy. But, you know, it's not like college sports are doomed. I don't want people to come away thinking that. But this is kind of a real issue that I think we're going to be following maybe sooner than some people realize. You know, ESPN might just – if you're ESPN, you know, what if you tell a conference, hey, we just don't have the money.
Mm-hmm.
Where are they going to go? Are they going to go to Fox Sports 1 and get paid pennies? ESPN might actually hold some of the cards here when they say, look, you can either renegotiate or you know, good luck. You know, I guess take us to court.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Bud. And there's some great historical examples of that, of people who failed to renegotiate with their current provider and really got burned in sports, on TV deals in general. So they might have a little bit more leverage than that. And ultimately, ESPN is so interwoven with college athletics and college football and the bowl system in particular, they almost are so big that you would have to negotiate with them or renegotiate with them. They are perhaps too big to fail. It's really curious how this all plays out, and we certainly haven't solved all the problems, but hopefully we've given people an idea as to, from the broad perspective of the changing landscape that is media in general, and tried to get as specific to Florida State as possible with how that might impact them with the conference's own TV deal. So something we've talked about for a while, and something I'm very happy we've been able to do. And as you mentioned there, this probably is not the last time that you and I spend a little bit of time talking about this subject.
No, and I really hope that, you know, that we don't see more good names lose their jobs. And look, a lot of these folks that got laid off were really talented, and I think they'll get picked up at least somewhere. You know, maybe not in the exact same capacity they were, but a couple other things I noticed, and this may be just way too inside baseball, but if you've listened this far, I mean, we're, you know, 40 minutes into this thing. A lot of the people that got laid off were more straight reporters, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is really saddening to me because – and I realize that the value of reporting as opposed to analyzing has been reduced in this day and age because the quickness with which the information spreads and just becomes general public knowledge, and I say this as you know someone who's heavily in the aggregation business, you know, is – it's much faster than it used to. So the ability to actually spend some analysis quickly telling people what the news means is more vital than ever. But if you keep firing all these people who actually figure out the news and report the news, then the people who are doing the analysis, what are they going to analyze?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like a lot of good stories are going to get untold or are going to go untold because you're letting go so many good news reporters, guys with good journalistic backgrounds who know how to do this kind of thing. At the same time, if I'm talking to a journalism class now, and I do sometimes, and they have me Skype in, which is crazy because I don't have a journalism degree, I tell them, you need to know what you're looking at when you're at a game. And you need to be able to analyze. You can't just be a quote farmer. You know, people don't read stories. People don't read game stories very much anymore. You know, there's a reason mm-hmm. we do the Instant Reaction podcast in addition to the game story because a lot of people want to listen. They want to hear the analysis as opposed to just the straight, you know, players talking. And a lot of times that's because when the players talk, they don't say a whole lot of interesting stuff. It's just coach speak. So be able to analyze. And I think that if you look at a lot of these folks, you get them in a multimedia setting, like the folks who got laid off, not all of them, but some of them. And you'd ask them what they thought on something, and they would react by saying, well, I talked to him, and he said blank. without offering really further analysis. You know, you ask me a question about a recruit and I'll say, yeah, I talked to him. He said he thinks this. But if I think he's full of shit, I'll follow up saying, but I'm not buying that. You got to be able to give the analysis part too. And unfortunately, like the clear barriers that we used to have between like columnists / analysts and reporters, those barriers are kind of gone. And I think in some ways that's a bad thing. Because when you give analysis, it does impact your ability to get good information out of the people, your interview subjects. But in other ways, it's just kind of reality, and you have to be able to adapt to that.
Well said, man. Very well said. And we'll see what that adaptation looks like. It'll be certainly something that plays out in front of us here in the next 2, 4, even 10 years. And it's a very interesting subject. Hopefully we've given people a little bit better idea as to our own personal thoughts as far as what happened today and what might happen in the future. But Bud, I wish you a fantastic vacation. Hope you and Maggie have a fantastic time in Italy, and we will all be waiting for your return.
All right, man. Looking forward to getting back to this, and looking forward to taking a couple of days kind of off the grid in Italy. And I hope this some people enjoy. We kind of kicked this around and thought, how do we put something out that's going to be relevant for more than just a day or two? Because the NFL draft obviously is going to be happening, or will have happened by the time you listen to this. And we didn't really want to do an NFL draft show that would be relevant for 12 hours. And